Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank for our first pod of 2024. First of all, Happy New Year to all the Sail Sharks family and thank you for coming back and joining us for another year inside the Shark Tank. My name is Lewis and joining me is my co-host Alex. Alex, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you, mate. Happy to be in the new year, feeling reflective on a pretty good 2023 for Sail Sharks, albeit not a great end. So, yeah, we've thankfully still got the good memory of the Saracens game, slightly disappointed about the Saints game. But all in all, I think plenty to be excited about in 2024. How are you?
Probably not as reflective. I hadn't really thought about sales 2023, but actually you look at it holistically and it was a pretty good year all around, albeit marked by a little bit of disappointment at Twickenham in May and obviously a bit of disappointment to finish the season because obviously we're coming to you off the back of sales 21-17 point defeat to Northampton on Saturday last weekend. And Alex, we've already talked about it a little bit off air, but I mean, what's your thoughts off the back of this? You know, Sale 17-7 up midway through the second half. You know, they wrestled control of the game after a cagey opening sort of 25-30 minutes where there was no point scored. It really felt like this one kind of slipped away from Sale, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you look, you know, as you say, up at half time 7-0, up at 45 minutes 14-0. Really set ourselves up for into the best position possible to win the game, I think. And then it all just seemed to fade away. And Northampton did this to us last season at Franklin's Gardens, you know, big comeback. So that is frustrating for it to happen again. It's different circumstances and slightly different nature of comeback. But yeah, it just feels like another opportunity missed. And you know, we've had two away games this season where we've got battered and you just hold your hands up and go, yeah, fair enough, we lost by 30, 40 points. We were never going to win that game. It's almost easy with those games to kind of write them off. Whereas with this one, I think it's more frustrating because you're 4 points down on the scoreboard. So you're within a try of a win. You were 14 points up with half an hour to play or whatever it was. And as a result, you just think this, add this to the list of, you know, every time I've missed a try bonus point this season, of you are right with opportunity missed, but also being punished for kind of not being clinical enough this season. And I think that's where it really comes to, because you know, this is Northampton team at home between Christmas and New Year, sellout crowd. It's a really, really tough ask. And really, I think what we should have done is probably put them away sooner rather than, you know, say, okay, we're 14-0 up after 50 minutes is fine, but they're always going to come back. Because I think Northampton were always probably going to score 20-odd points, weren't they? I think we all, even in our predictions, I think we all thought that. So we had to score more. And that's where it comes to for me is that, you know, if you look at, say, that period, not necessarily the second half, but that period after 45 minutes, we only scored 3 points. And if you're going to keep a lead, you can't be giving it away. You can't not score in the last half an hour of the game, can you?
Where did you stand on that George Ford drop goal then? Because already we're starting to peel back the layers, and you said we didn't score enough points. And there's obviously an opportunity. We're in the Northampton 22. We're 14-7 up, I think it is, at that point. And the play was to get Ford into position for the drop goal, and he actually kicks it. It's a really, really good drop goal under a lot of pressure. Am I getting the sense then that you're thinking maybe that wasn't the right approach and maybe we're a little bit too cute with it at what was ultimately quite a pivotal moment in the game?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. I think I still think I don't mind the drop goal. And I do think that it's quite a useful weapon if, because I suppose when you look at when we had that drop goal, in the context of where we were in the game, not knowing that obviously we were going to get on to lose, we were 7 points up and that took us 10 points up and it keeps that buffer. I think the issue that we then didn't do is then didn't go on and get another penalty or another drop goal or whatever. And partly because we just didn't have the territory and the possession to do that. for reasons we'll come on to, I'm sure, later. But yeah, I don't mind the drop goal, and I think it's worked quite well. We did one at Bristol, I want to say it was, that kind of kept us in the game before we then pulled away later on. So I do think it's a good tactic. I think I'm almost saying do it more, because if you knock over another one, you know, you then all of a sudden turning it into a one-point game at the end of the game, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's about kind of, I think, ultimately, where it comes to is that we didn't have enough pressure in that second half to put ourselves in the position to get the 3 points to kind of keep them at arm's length. Because I think we all know that scoring tries is really difficult for us this season for whatever reason. You know, this is a very good Northampton Saints defence as well. Lee Radford come over from Rugby League. Very good idea by Northampton to get a respected Rugby League ex-player and coach to come and sort the defence out. I wonder who gave them that idea. But you know, it's good defence. It's going to be hard to score points against. There's a separate conversation about, is our attack good enough? I think it probably is, but I don't think the switching around in the 10, 12, 13 channels is helping that necessarily. But I just think, even with all that said, if we'd had some field position, I can see George Ford knocking over 3 points somewhere. So really probably what this comes down to is, okay, the game management maybe was there, but you can only manage so far if your forwards are getting battered up front and you're going backwards and you don't have any possession. So maybe that the game played out as it should. It's just, it comes back to that frustration of, we should have scored more points. How do we do that? And I think where we're getting to is, maybe we just never were going to do that because of how the forwards were going in the last 30.
Well, the thing, having had a few days to think about it, the thing that I keep coming back to is, this seems to be the first time this year where a lack of experience and actually lack of depth on our bench has really caught us out. It feels like we've been playing quite fast and loose with it so far this year. I mean, it's never really come to bite us on the arse. We've always sort of managed, you know, even against Saracens, for example, Asher, and we'll talk about him later, you know, comes on and produces this, you know, fantastic performance to win a scrum penalties. You know, it kind of comes out of nowhere. You know, Josh Bowman comes on and looks like how he was 10 years ago. You know, we're rolling with our third choice, you know, scrum half off the bench in Nye Thomas, who's played, one or two Premiership games at this point. This, to me, felt like the very first time where we've been caught out with maybe the quality and maybe the strength of that bench. And I think, to your point, Alex, you kind of see it in that second half where we stop winning collisions, we stop having possession, we stop losing, stop gaining territory. And I don't know, it just felt like, you know, by the end of the game, we were obviously kind of clinging on, and Northampton were in the ascendancy. And obviously, as a result, they bypassed us and won the game.
Yeah, it's a very fair point. And I think you've also got to factor in that if you are talking about people like Asher and Knight, you know, in terms of young academy kids breaking through into the team, doing it at home in front of a Salford Community Stadium, as it is now, in front of a home crowd who are massively behind you, is really, really exciting. And is really motivating and is a lot easier than doing it in front of a load of Northampton fans who were on the beers at Christmas and desperately want you to not do well. And the pressure's different, isn't it? And I think, you know, you can talk about, say, the Leicester game for Asher and I coming on. Sorry, not Leicester, Leinster. But I think the expectation was so off then that, again, it's a different level of pressure. And really, this Northampton game is a very important league game. You've kind of had a couple of goes in the first team, so people know your name and people are looking out for you. And also, you're away from home. And ultimately, in a team that is getting fairly well-roundedly under the cosh beaten at this point, you know, the momentum has shifted to Northampton. So what you're asking players, young players like that, to do is come on and change the momentum. And I think that is really hard. I think that is the kind of the difficulty there Whereas, you know, in the Leinster game, the game had gone, and then we brought on Asher, really, I think, you know. Well, maybe it hadn't quite gone, but it was, you know, you always knew that Leinster were running away with it, didn't you?
It's a different context. It's a different environment to come into. You can kind of just, you know, just go out there and play your best game. Don't worry too much about the result.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. It comes down, I think that's where this game comes down to, is that when we unload our bench, in that case, you know, it's not the bench that would be starting a Premiership final if you had everyone fit and available, is it? And that's no disrespect to those players. They, as we've said multiple times on this podcast, they're going to be really good players. But, you know, if Northampton, say, are bringing on someone of massive experience on that bench,
like Courtney Laws.
Yeah, exactly. you know, then that's really hard to compete with. You just have to accept that, you know, that's the sort of the way you manage your squad. And ultimately for us, you know, we've had, I think this campaign compared to last campaign, a lot of injuries. We've had a lot of injuries, and a lot of injuries in key positions. And because of the way the salary cap is now, that is just going to hurt you. Whether, you know, you can have the best academy players, but what you really need is very, very cheap academy graduates who are, we've always said this, these kind of ideal players who are cheap academy graduates, England qualified, so you get both the England credits and the academy credits, who aren't getting picked for England, so can play for you week in, week out, and who don't get injured. And so someone like Ross Harrison is ideal there. You know, that's the kind of player you're talking about. But, you know, that they're the players you need in these kind of moments when you've got a squad who is stretched quite thin by injury. And ultimately, you know, someone like Asher is going to be that in 5 years, but not yet. And similar for the rest of the academy lads in the squad. So I think you're right. I think it's a test of that squad depth, and probably one ultimately where being away from home in the whole context of that game against a very good side who had an experienced bench, it was just one step too far. It doesn't mean that it's like panic stations. It just means, you know, if we come back in 2 years and in that exact same scenario, I think you'd be much more confident in seeing out that game. But these are the kind of learning experiences you go through, aren't they? It's necessary. And also, when you look at where we are on the table, it's not a disaster. It's just that sense of, I think what we're both trying to encapsulate is that sense of frustration that we could have won this game and we could have been top of the table and we could have put a bit of distance between ourselves and the rest of the chasing pack, and instead we're right in the mixer.
Yeah, it feels like an opportunity lost. It feels like a game that really did slip away, particularly because how well we'd managed the game in the first half. That first 25 minutes, we spoke about it a little bit off air, but we're kind of like, what was it, like a really rubbish first half, or is it actually a sign of the quality of both teams that it was 0-0 after 30 minutes? There's a lot of probing, there's a lot of game management, there's, you know, some good ball in play time, particularly at the start of the game. It had a real sort of chess match feel to it, and it's a chess match that Sale won. You know, we were up 7-0 at half time. You know, we got one really good opportunity in the Northampton 22, and we took it. You know, really, you know, smart bit of play by George Ford with the, you know, with the double pump to send Joe Carpenter through for a try. It was a much deserved try. You know, we deserved to be 7-0, 7-3 up at half time, and then we obviously build upon that lead in the second half with Luke Kandicki's try. You know, off the back of the rolling ball, it's the first time we managed to get that going. And it felt like we'd done well. You know, we built that foothold. We had the ascendancy. But then this is where the reality of rugby is, the reality of being only as strong as your 23rd man. You know, after 50, 55 minutes, you could just see the energy start to drain out of the team. It doesn't help as well. You've got Rob Dupree at 12, who's obviously playing out of position. I thought he went absolutely fine at 12, but you don't have the such traditional structure that you tend to play with. You know, sometimes you do just need to go a one-out runner up the middle, and when that's Rob Dupree at 12 rather than Manitou Alangi or even Sam Bedloe, you know, that takes away one of your options. You could see it when we had the ball a little bit in that second half. We didn't have quite as strong a structure, given that Northampton had started to adapt to how we'd played in the first half. There's just all these like little moments that are then exacerbated by, you know, by injuries, as we've said, by the depth in the team. Ross Harrison, amazing shift, you know, what form he's in, but he goes 78 minutes because, you know, it's Tumi Onasanya coming off the bench rather than Bevan Rod. It just felt like, you know, if the game was played over 60 minutes, you know, we would have won it. I think we would have been deserved winners, you know, but the game isn't. It's over 80 minutes. And I think actually over the course of the 80 minutes, I thought Saints, you know, probably did shade us and probably were deserved winners.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, we've seen second halves this season, we have struggled. And Northampton clearly took advantage of that. But as you say, you need to be able to go that 80 in this kind of game. And what seems to be costing us, which is a good point about someone like Ross Harrison and Rob Dupree are playing at 12, is that our injuries are coming in sort of multiple players in the same position. So you look at this week, we've not got Bevan Rod and Si Mark at loose heads. So we've got Ross Harrison going 80, as you said. And we've not got Manu Tuilagi and Sam Bedloe at 12. So we've got Rob Dupree going in there. I don't think Connor Dock's fit at the moment. I think he might be injured as well. Sorry, Connor, if you're not, hold my hands up. But, you know, as a result, you're playing Rob Dupree at 12 when clearly the plan isn't to play him there. It's to play him at 10 or 13, depending on whether George Ford's available. And, you know, so Sam James gets back in and everyone's thinking, great. And also at 12, you know, someone like Luke James, who was supposed to be on the bench and pulled out with an injury in the warm-up or the day before. So, yeah, it's those, you know, you look at, say, the wings, still got really good competition there. We've got Roebuck and Reid on fire, scored 5 and 4 tries in the Premiership between each this season. So, you know, full-back, you've got Carpenter pretty much nailed it down.
And just on Joe Carpenter, what a game I thought he had. You know, that 30 minutes to start the game that I spoke about, you can only sort of manage and win that period if you're 9, you're 10, and you're 15 are bossing it. And a lot of the plaudits will go to George Ford on that, and rightly so. But I thought Carpenter, just in terms of his, you know, his carries, his recoveries, and actually his kicking out of hand, that's a massive part of why we actually won that arm wrestle.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it was a real kicking battle in that first half. And we basically, the reason we won that first half is because we won the kicking battle. You know, you look at, as you say, Warren Ford, sort of Ford's tactical kicking, Ward's box kicking, Roebuck and Reid on the chase, I thought were brilliant. Roebuck obviously took a great high ball for the Joe Carpenter try to sort of set that up. But even just in the rest of the half, I think we put them under massive pressure, created loads of opportunities. And as you say, Carpenter at fullback kind of diffusing whenever they tried to do the same to us. You know, it was a really, really strong performance. And that comes from having, I think, partially a settled first-choice player in that position. And that's why the back three was so strong. That's why 9 and 10 are so strong, because I think, you know, you're ending up with Gus and George coming as kind of first choice. If you look at where we sort of more struggled, it's where we've had to make enforced changes and where we're down to players having to either play 80 or, you know, dipping into kind of senior academy players, etc., to make sure that we're able to field the 23, being really, really brutal about it. So I think our first choice players are playing well. It's just that this squad is stretched pretty thin, and you know, you can cover that up with confidence and hype, and, you know, a George Ford can drag you to a win at home. I just think it's so much harder to do away, isn't it? And that's exactly what happened, is that, you know, you can drag people for 60 minutes, but in the last 20, you're going to be under the pump. And that is when the sort of balance of power in the squads tends to show itself. And just before we started recording off air, you described it as a test match. And that's kind of what happens in test matches, isn't it? You know, ultimately, the best team will win. But you might not know that until the last 20 minutes, because you can keep yourself in the fight. But it's that last quarter where, you know, it's why Wales focus so much on fitness. It's why, you know, it's why the All Blacks are so good. It's why South Africa are world champions, because that last 20 is when the game is won and lost. So if you can be, you know, winning collisions then and winning the kind of on-field dominance and territory in possession, then you're going to win the game. So it comes back to that, I think, doesn't it? And as you say, that's ultimately that comes to the squad depth, and we can't do a lot about that. It is just, it's almost frustrating that you sort of have to hold your hands up and go, okay, these players will learn from it and we'll get better. But it almost feels like we were set up for a loss almost before the game, I guess.
Yeah, no, look, I think it's a really fair point. And it's interesting when we move to sort of the three-word reviews and kind of get a sense of, you know, what the Shark fam are talking about. I can reel these off, Alex. You know, James Elsender, need bonus points. We're going to come on to that in a second. It's a really good point. Zach, you know, attack still lacking. Taylor, forwards look knackered. You know, it speaks to, you know, just some of the hard graft they're having to do at the moment. Charles Edwards, must score tries. Peter Taylor, 3 points dropped. As, you know, we touched upon that already. Brad is the boat. Saints, Sam Russell, Sharks. And lastly, John Capel. We'll probably use this to as our jumping off point. Asher, reality check. And I guess that was one theme from the game that I'm keen to chat about today is, oh, that was a tough outing, and that was a learning experience for Asher, wasn't it? Three scrum penalties, I think it was, against him, and a yellow card to boot. It just shows you how difficult it can be to you know, match the hype, particularly when you're a 19-year-old prop playing Premiership games.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had to pull a bit of coal out the hype train's engine this week and just slow us down, you know. Maybe make an unscheduled stop for a bit of rest and recovery. It's really, listen, it was always going to happen at some point, wasn't it? It's a shame it's happened like away in a game like that. But I think, especially as well, we didn't seem to be on the right side of the referee on a lot of things. And I don't think that helped. I think what we benefited from is the Saris game. We presented a real picture of dominance to Tempest all over the field, and that really helped. In this game, Carly was not... I just felt like, you know, the 50-50s were kind of not really going our way as often as you would want them to. There's one Ben Curry turnover, which was looked like the most legit turnover I've ever seen, which was a penalty. It was just stuff like that where you felt, okay... You know, that this is, I mean, this in the 50-50s, the referees are making a call, it's absolutely fine. And sometimes, you know, 10 out of 10 go your way, sometimes 5 out of 10 go your way, sometimes none out of 10 go your way. So I'm not sort of having a go at referees here, because I think we've probably got the rub of the green against Saracens a bit, albeit I think our dominance kind of earned that. But I just think it's important context for when you're a 19-year-old prop coming on trying to anchor down a scrum that is struggling. You know, Nick Shonnett's given away quite a few penalties. We've never had any real dominance. Even if you're doing everything right, I just think it's so easy for the opposition to present the pitch to the referee that you're the one at fault. And that's where, you know, that's where the experience comes in. That's where, you know, almost being a big name comes in. I think if you've got, it's hard to think of an example now because I always used to use Adam Jones and he's retired a long time ago, so showing my age. But, you know, and Adam Jones used to come on a tight head, and everyone used to go, okay, well, he's the best prop in the world, so he's going to win the penalty. And it was almost a foregone conclusion. So I do think there's an element of that with scrums, because, you know, it's so hard to call. It's almost why Andrew Porter got alone penalties against us, and why James Harper got sent off 2 weeks ago at Leinster, because he's Andrew Porter and he's a British and Irish Lion. And even though his hips are facing perpendicular to the scrum, doesn't matter because he's Andrew Porter. So, you know, it is a tough lesson. It's exactly what you expect to happen. Listen, we've got a good sort of, I think the run of games is beneficial because you've got two games in Europe that the expectation is massively off. I don't think any of us are expecting, you know, Sale to get out of the pools into a good position with the draw we got. So you've got a chance for Asher to play there. We've got one Premiership game home to Bristol, so a home game, that's quite positive. And then I think we've got an away game to Gloucester, which will be a tough test, but that's in 4 weeks' time. But then after that, we've got a massive break. And almost the, you know, you've got 4 more weeks of spotlight on Asher probably, because we're going to need someone as that second choice tight head. But after that, you know, going to the Six Nations, all the attention goes onto England, and almost, what I would be doing, and I'd be interested to see whether they do this, is kind of send Ashley back off to Sale FC, go and get some minutes under your belt, go and get a bit of confidence back, and you know, then you've got loads of time to rest, recover, come back into the Sale side for the end of the season. So, yeah, reality check is a fair word, and it's exactly what it is, but I think there's still so much to be excited about with him as a player, but coming on into that environment, I think, you know, it was almost the perfect storm of referee not really loving Sale, getting dominated in the game and needing someone to turn it around, wasn't it?
I think it's that, you know, the fact that you know when you come on or come into a match where your forward pack is getting sort of knocked backwards, not massively so, but a little bit, you know, when you're kind of losing collisions, you know, when the sort of ascendancy is on one side, when you have those 50-50 decisions, it's, you know, it's very fair for Matthew Card to look at it and say, well, look, you know, one team is going forward here, one team isn't, when we're not at the scrum. So it makes sense that it would push forward, you know, and like I said, it's probably a 55-45 decision in Northampton's favour, because I think they were the better team. And I will confess, this Northampton team, you know, we knew about, you know, Furbank, Tommy Freeman, Sly Homer, you know, all those players in the backs, but I was actually really impressed with the balance of their forward pack. You know, the work rate that you've got with someone like Angus Scott-Young, Tom Pearson, and then Jarno Augustus, really nice balance in your back row. Those three players can all do like a little bit of everything. I just thought that they just looked really... they could all do a little bit of everything sort of collectively. Individually, they all have very specific roles, but when you put them together, they look really balanced. You know, I thought Munger and Coles ran the lineup really well, and put a lot of pressure on us in a way that we've not seen this year. Obviously, up front, their front row had the ascendancy there. You know, you just look at that and you think, well, you know, it's a really well-rounded forward pack. And then you bring on, you know, your Courtney Laws and your Curtis Langdons and whoever else. Like, it's not surprising that there's a very definite picture in there. But, you know, look at, if nothing else, it's a losing bonus point. It's a game we probably should have won. And I think if, you know, let's face it, if we've got Bevan Rod and we've got, you know, Tom Curry coming off the bench, maybe the game does look a little bit different. But the problem is, it is an opportunity lost. And with that result, we are back down to third in the table. And actually, you had a great stat to me about the Premiership table and first and sixth. Do you want to share it with the listeners?
Set up beautifully. I didn't see that coming. So yeah, if you look at the Premiership table now, obviously Sale in third on 32 points. There are 3 points between first and sixth, which make it a hell of an exciting run in. Great for the neutral. Awful for a Sale fan, because we could have been top of this table. But, you know, it mentioned in three-word reviews, if you look at where we are on 32 points, we've got 7 wins. If we've got a couple more bonus points, we'd be top of the table. Bath have got one less win than us. They've dropped 4 points, and yet they're on the same number of league points as us because they've got 4 extra bonus points.
That's criminal, you know, from a Sale perspective. Yeah. You know, and I didn't, until you mentioned this to me earlier, and I went and did a bit of a deep dive into the table, I didn't realise Sale have actually scored the second least points in the league this year. They've scored 188 points. Only Newcastle on 149 have scored less. And you're just seeing how important those bonus points are. You know, 2 tries again at the weekend. You know, not even close to get a try bonus point. You've got teams like Bath who are, you know, look, to your point, Alex, they've won a game less, which is massive in a 10-team league. They've won a game less and they're still the same amount of points. It is a bit of a concern for Sale at this point, I think, because you can see a scenario in 3-4 months' time where we've played, 18 games. We might have won 15, 14 of them, and we're still sixth because we're just not racking up enough bonus points. And I don't want to catastrophize here, but just look at how important that 43-point to nothing loss at Exeter has been in terms of the table. Look at how we've just only got 1 point instead of four against Northampton, these are the results that do start to make a big difference, even when actually 10 games into the season, we've won 70% of our games. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. And I think there's, you know, we're never going to get bonus point at Exeter and Quinns, try bonus point wise. Yeah, maybe we could argue you probably should be competitive enough to get a losing bonus point. But I think the real ones that are an issue for me are the games where we scored three tries, you know, away at Leicester, at home to Northampton, start of the season. You know, home to against Saris, we scored three tries as well. So there's three games there where you've scored three tries, and realistically, we're in positions to score the fourth and never did. So, you know, if you score those three, all of a sudden the table looks very different, doesn't it? Because we're top of it. So it is a problem, and it's a bit of a worry. I think our game plan doesn't necessarily lend itself to try bonus points in the way that, say, Northampton's does. You know, if we're going to rely on the kind of kick-in game of George Ward and kick chase, then it's going to be harder to score. The problem is we're never going to score six or seven. You know, four is probably our max, so we're going to be somewhere between nought and four every game, which is probably the real issue, I think. And also, you know, the attack just has been clunky because of Rob Dupree being at 10 and then 13 and then 12 and Sam James being in and out the side and Bedlam and Tuilagi kind of interchanging at 12 depending on who's fit and available. You know, there's not been much consistency in that. There's real decision-making positions in the back line in the midfield, and I think that makes a massive difference. I think the tries will come at some point, but it needs a bit of stability, and we haven't quite got that yet through a combination of circumstances. And part of that is injury, so it's not a criticism of anyone. But as you say, it's hugely important to get those bonus points. And ultimately, I think those bonus points are going to be the difference between a home semi-final and an away semi-final if you're in the top four at the end of the year, which isn't to say that we will be, because, you know, it's a really competitive league. I think if you look at our fixtures that we've got left, we've got Gloucester and Newcastle away, which is in theory the easiest two in the league given their performances this season, albeit Newcastle is an almost guaranteed loss for us, and then we've got kind of a few of the top middle table teams at home, and I think we've got Quinns and we've got Saracens, Bath away, who are sort of, you know, in that top four conversation. So they're going to be tough games. Sarri's last away game of the season, last game of the season. So it might be decided by them. But we've definitely got an opportunity to get ourselves in the top four here. But I think those bonus points might come back to bite us at the end of the season, if I'm being pessimistic, which as a Sale fan, I have every license to be.
Well, we're going to go from pessimistic to optimistic. So I was just about to say, bonus points are going to be a massive focus for the rest of the season. We've got a good opportunity to get one with our next game, Friday Night Lights, at home to Bristol. And it's interesting, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the table just now. We've been talking about how close it is at the top. This season, more so than maybe any I can remember, it feels like a real season of haves and have-nots, right? The top six, Saints, Chiefs, Sale, Bath, Saris, Quinns, all within 3 points of each other. You then have Leicester in the kind of mushy middle there on 25 points, and then below them you have Bristol, Gloucester and Newcastle. Newcastle probably, again, on a bit of an island of their own, having yet to win a game this year. Gloucester, again, probably a bit of an island of their own, won two games this year. Then you have Bristol, who've won 4 out of 10. So not doing bad, but in a season where the margins are really close and there's so many good teams and it's a shrunken league, 4 wins isn't really going to cut it. And obviously that poor run of form, or poorish run of form, continued last weekend. They got beat 24-14 by Bristol, by Exeter. Exeter picking up a try bonus point. Even though they only scored 24 points, you know, it speaks to just how important it is. I don't think I've ever seen a a 5-point win when they've only scored 24 points, but you know, they do happen. And I guess, Alex, this Bristol team is, it's a bit of an enigma, isn't it? You know, 3-4 years ago, they had Pietau, they had Luatua, you know, then you had Randrandre. It's this almost sort of Harlem Globetrotters, you know, Pat Lam hasn't playing, you know, miracle ball all the time. There's a real sort of flavour to Bristol. You know, a couple of, you know, I know that obviously they got knocked out of the playoffs at the first attempt. Whoops. A couple of years down the line, Pat Lam is still there, and there's still the same sort of feeling to this team, in a sense. They're a bit like Quins. They're sort of considered by TNT Sport as like the entertainers of the league. And actually, look at some of the players. I'm just looking at who played on Friday night. Max Malins is joined from Saracens. Virimi Vakatawa has come over from France. What a player he was at his peak. You know, Bernard Janssen van Rensburg has come over from Irish, you know, been one of the most consistent players in the Premiership the last couple of years. You know, you've got Ellis Gaines, you've got Carl Sinclair, Stephen Luatu is still there. There's loads and loads of quality in this Bristol team, but the results just don't seem to be there. And I guess, to go back to my original point, this feels like a not only a winning opportunity for Sale, but like a bonus point opportunity for Sale, doesn't it? This Bristol team, for whatever reason this year, has really kind of struggled to put it together. Maybe it's the influx of new players. You know, maybe there isn't enough quality at 9 and 10 with Randall and Sheedy. They've got James Williams, obviously formerly of Sale. He's dovetailing with Sheedy at the moment at the 10 position whilst AJ McGinty is injured. But whatever the reason, it just hasn't clicked for them this year. And I don't know if you agree with me, but this does feel like a real opportunity for Sale to kind of kick back on, right the ship, and really maybe stamp some authority on a Bristol team that I can't imagine are going to be looking forward to playing on a Friday night in the cold at Sale.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It's almost a must win, but it's getting towards a must bonus point win. Because of where this Bristol team are. Because as you say, if you look at the league, it is so split between teams who are going to be there or thereabouts at the end of the season and teams who you think need an incredible run to get up there, because there's only 8 rounds left. You know, there's not a lot of time to make up that ground. And if you're going to have to go away, people are going to have to go away to places like Saracens and Bath and Northampton and to us. And I think if you're a Sarri's team playing this Bristol team at home on Friday night under the lights, you're thinking bonus point win. And that is exactly the way we should be thinking, because that's the level we should be at. So it's a hard thing to do as a Sale fan, isn't it, to kind of demand a bonus point win, because we're just naturally the underdogs and we naturally want to play it down. But I think it's absolutely crucial in a game like this. And I think similarly, in however many weeks' time, I'll be saying we need to win away at Gloucester and we need to win away at Newcastle, because the other two away games are Bath and Saracens, and that's a much, much harder prospect. So it is, it's absolutely crucial. And I think you're right that this is a Bristol team full of talent, really, really good players, but who just cannot get playing together. I think they're suffering from the salary cap kind of coming down. And, you know, I think when they had that season, when they made the playoffs, it was with a big, exciting squad. And what's probably hurting them is that, you know, they don't have the kind of... They've had to... If you want to keep the big squad, you've got to compromise on the quality of players. And vice versa, you either end up with, you know, higher quality players in a smaller squad or lower quality players in a bigger squad. I'm not sure they've quite got that squad build right. I think it's a very different landscape to the one Pat Lam took over in. If you think about when he came in, it was pre-COVID. It was, you know, you haven't got the games going through all the financial troubles that the Premiership was and to an extent still is in. So I think that's been a challenge for them. But, you know, as you say, they've still got ridiculous players in that team. I mean, Vakatawa, if he gets going, is going to be an absolute wrecking ball. He was up there with the best players in the world, wasn't he?
Yeah, and that's what we saw when they played Newcastle. They really struggled to put Newcastle away, and then he just had one moment of brilliance from Vakatawa, which led to a try and the game, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's the worry of Bristol, that they will have those one moment of brilliance. So the way to beat them is just to reduce that one moment of brilliance to a consolation try towards the end of the game, or a consolation try at the start of the game. I mean, I think if you look at the away game, they scored quite early on, didn't they? With a really, really good try. And then quality kind of told. So that's exactly what we have to do with this game is, you know, we have to score four tries, because I think if we don't, this isn't like Bath where we could get away with scoring 11 points. If we score 11 points at home to Bristol, they will probably win the game, because you can guarantee they've got 7 points in a miracle try at some point during the game, and then it's not a big leap to get to a win. So, as you say, I think almost not only is the bonus point needed for league position, but just for the nature of the game, I think we need to be scoring that amount of points.
Yeah, absolutely. And also because, you know, Northampton, Exeter, Bath, you know, they probably are going to beat Bristol when they play, and they probably are going to be able to score, you know, four tries. And all of a sudden that gap, even with the same ultimate outcome, a win over Bristol, just gets that little bit bigger in what is shaping up to be a very, very exciting second half of the season. I guess from a player personnel perspective, then given what you've already alluded to, we've got this game, we've got a game away at Gloucester, two games in Europe, and then maybe not in that order, but we've basically got Bristol as part of a four-game standard, and we're basically done for 2 months, and there's no games. It does feel like we have to kind of go all guns blazing where possible, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're limited by the injuries as well, aren't we? So, yeah, we've got to go all guns blazing that are fit is pretty much the mentality for this one. But how we fit them in is kind of, it is going to be, the difficulty is, if you've got someone like Rob Dupree who is fit, do you sacrifice kind of his ability at turning 13 to get him in the team at 12 because we need a 12? And I think, if anything, stability from last week is probably going to help, because I think if you look at, you know, number one, you've got a team there who probably feel like they should have won that game and are itching to get out and fix it. But number two, I think chopping and changing our midfield has been part of our issue. So I would like to see us go with the same midfield. I think in the forwards, we are really kind of limited by injuries. I think if you look, you know, we need like, we have to hope Ernst-Van Rijn's not injured, because he obviously had a little injury at the end of the first half. You know, you've got the likes of Jean-Luc coming back from injury. Sam Dugdale, Cobus Beast has put in a massive shift this season. You know, I think without him, we'd be really struggling. Johnny Hill as well, to be fair. I think in the second row, that's been one area of consistency really in the team. So, yeah, fortunately or unfortunately, the team pretty much picks itself. But I think if we roll out the same 23, I would not be unhappy with that. And hopefully that gives us the kind of platform for players like Tom Roebuck and Aaron Reid, who've been in really good form, to score tries that win us the game. So, yeah, I wouldn't be changing anything. I don't know whether you'd make any changes, Lewis, if there's anyone I've missed or anyone. If you just start Asher for the... So I'll get the hype train started up again if you need.
I do wonder whether or not we look at bringing Ben Bamber back into the team. I can't remember who made the point, so I do apologise if this person listens to the pod. Someone on Twitter made a really good point about how when Johnny Hill went off, obviously we replaced him with Josh Beaumont, but when Cobus Visa went off to bring Sam Dugdale on, we moved Ernst-Van Rijn to the second row for a little bit of time. And actually, off the back of that, our scrum looked really, to be honest, underpowered. I think it's a really good point. We seem to really be struggling in the second row at the moment when Johnny Hill's not playing. Cobus Visa, look, I've made my feelings about this quite clear. I still, even after two, three seasons, I don't really see him as a lock that is going to necessarily win us a league. I know it's very, you know, in vogue at the moment to have like a Theo McFarlane type who can slide to the second row, but I still don't necessarily see it in the same way that I might have done a couple of years ago. I do wonder whether or not we go Ben Bamber, Johnny Hill, and have two out and out locks in the team. particularly given how poorly actually our lineout went as well. We came under a lot of pressure. Northampton were able to pressure us in that area quite easily, and we really did struggle, particularly again when we're rotating hookers in. You know, Gus Creevy didn't play this weekend. Last weekend, Luke Cowan-Dickie makes a start. Tommy Taylor's on the bench. You know, I appreciate you don't want to try and mix things up too much, but we do seem to be a little bit lightweight. And particularly if Van Rijn's not going to be playing, I'd much rather have Cobus Visa slide across to six and bring in an out-and-out lock to play there. With Dan Dupree not available, you have to play Jean-Luc at eight, you know. So there's all these kind of dominoes. But the one thing that I do wonder whether or not the coaching staff take a long look at is what do we do alongside Johnny Hill? Because we do just look a little bit underpowered there. I think that might be the pod for this week. We've got to do some predictions though, Alex. So Friday night at home to Bristol. What are you anticipating from a sale perspective?
I'm keeping the faith. It's going to be a big win. I think we're going to win 32-7. I think this is a Bristol team, really long confidence, really long form. So I'm going to back us to do the business. Might be overconfident, but I just feel like we've shown we can react at home. You know, if you look at that Saracens performance, then I think against a Bristol, that would be a comfortable win. I'm backing us. What do you think, Lewis?
I think you're right. I think we can learn more about this team from the Saracens game 2 weeks ago than we can for this Northampton game. So I'm going to say Sale 32, Bristol 16. But to your point, I think the reality is we should hopefully be 32-9 up by, you know, 75 minutes, and it's just a single try from Bristol at the end to make it look a little bit closer. I'm feeling quite confident about this one. And before we say goodbye, any news from North West Rugby over the Christmas and New Year break, Alex?
I don't think so. No, everyone's been off. So there's a few fixtures this week for the likes of Coldy and across the North West, and then full fixtures back in that one the week after. So there'll be a few to get down to there with Sale FC and Tosche Park and Lim and everywhere else over the North West. So we'll do a full round up next week of the results and have a look at what's to come there. But hopefully everyone's enjoyed the Christmas break. Not had too many mince pies and Christmas dinner with games next week, but hopefully we see some North West Rugby success this weekend and into the rest of 2024.